You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It is Tour Live. It's Neil Atkinson with Adam Smith, with Sean Rogers and with Sean Bennett to look ahead to the game against the famous Manchester United, to start off with the also famous Naby Keita, and from there talk about what Liverpool's feelings may be if he is indeed stalling on a new contract, if he is indeed nervous about signing a new contract, if he worries about his Liverpool future. That is all to come. Very, very pleased to be joined by Sean, by Adam and by Sean. Coming up as well, if you listen to this podcast, we've got Michelle Langan from the Paper Cup Project, and we've got Augusti Malunga on his book, Never Give Up. That is both to come if you listen to this as a podcast as well. So you've got Augusti Malunga and you've got Michelle Langan, and both of them are to come. But if you just want the raw Tour Live experience, if you're joining us on any one of a variety of platforms, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Twitch, I've never Twitched. Well, I've occasionally birdwatched, but that's not what they mean. But I'm sure it's very, very good indeed. If you join us on those ones, you might just want that, and it's a pleasure to have you. You can get your comments in as we go all the way through. We might throw some of them into the frame, into the shake-up, and especially where Naby Keita is concerned, because he manages to be a footballer, Sean Rogers, who still divides opinion. I've decided he still divides opinion because he's mostly, for a club of Liverpool's stature and a club of Liverpool's ambitions, he's quite good. And in a lot of ways, there's nothing worse than being quite good, because everyone has an opinion and everyone makes a case. And Naby Keita, sadly, whether he likes it or not, where Liverpool are concerned, quite good. Could improve. You never know.
Bit like my vest. I'm wondering how many people have tuned in on YouTube and are just either thoroughly disappointed or really happy.
Relieved, some would say.
That's exactly massive relief, isn't it? Yeah, look, I think it's more symptomatic with actually Liverpool's midfield than it is actually to do with Naby Keita. Liverpool's midfield, you could write a decent thesis on.
Pep Linders has.
Yeah, there's literally chapters on it about what Liverpool expect them to do. And, you know, I've said before, I think Liverpool don't view it in terms of the individual brilliance of what a midfielder does. It's about how those cogs work and get the most out of both ends of the football pitch ultimately. And they're there to facilitate the best of the attack and the best of defence, which is literally what a midfielder is there to do. The issue comes, I think, in that I can't really think of a midfielder under Klopp that hasn't had questions asked about them at some point in time. And they're even midfielders that have been quite consistent in their performance levels and quite consistent in their attendance records as well. When you factor in that Naby, you know, has had injury issues, if you like, availability issues, when you add in the fact that he's as likely to be hooked on half time as he is to get a 9 out of 10, he can hit the highest of highs, but I don't think you fully quite know what Naby Keita is going to show up in a game. You know, I like him, I rate him as a player, I think he's got a really high ceiling, and we haven't consistently seen the best of him thus far, but I can completely understand why he would divide opinion, and I completely understand why our midfield would, but I don't think enough people sort of go that step further and go, well, you can't really discuss them as individuals without discussing the collective.
The collective part of this, Adam, is, I think, the most important thing. The manager is happy with his midfield lot. He's going at lengths to explain that he's happy about his midfield lot. In terms of how he sees them working for them over the course of an entire season, Liverpool supporters are concerned about that. Some Liverpool supporters are concerned about that. It's interesting that Klopp says today, you know, he has to respond on news, very much in inverted commas. But if you learn on my side, he's 0.0% behind the news. He was ill, now he's in training, looking good. Not a player overly happy when he's not playing, but all fine. The manager has this vibe of, he would just quite like to have his status quo. And we can feel any way we want on that. And Naby Keita can possibly feel any way they want on that. And people close to Naby Keita might feel any way they want on that. But the Liverpool manager appears to be very, very happy with his midfield status quo, to the point of almost boring us with how much that is the case.
Yeah, and I think he's obviously right to be happy when they're on song. I think the problem that I think a lot of us have that would like us to get another midfielder is that pretty much every single midfielder we've got has issues in terms of their fitness. And when you've got a midfield that is asked to do as much as a Jurgen Klopp midfield is asked to do, it becomes very, very difficult to have players that miss chunks of time. So Naby Keita, I think, is the perfect example of that. The comment you just put up by George is absolutely right. He's fantastic when he's firing. The problem is when he's not firing, as Sean said before, he's just likely to be hooked at halftime. That is the issue that I think a lot of people have with him. And it's why I think he is such a divisive figure, because those that want to see all of the good stuff in Naby Keita can point to the good performances and go, see how good he was there, see how brilliant he was there. The people who want to maybe criticise him can point to the likes of that shot in the Champions League final and go, aye, but when he's shite, he's shite. So that becomes really problematic, I think. And for the midfield as a whole, Fabinho has quietly got the ability to get injured, you know, fairly regularly. Jordan Henderson's another year older and getting injured again fairly regularly. James Milner's 36, and I thought, you know, I've had my problems with Milner in the past, but when he's really good, he's really good, and that's fine. But when a 36-year-old is your first choice, basically what is seemingly first choice midfielder, you've got a slight problem. You just have, as much as the manager might want to deny it, you have. And, you know, he's not the first choice. Like, I really don't want to see James Milner starting against Manchester City, as an example. But we're almost getting ourselves into a situation where that's likely to happen. So I can't put, off the top of my head, I cannot think of and point to a midfielder where I go, they have established themselves as a first team midfielder and they have no injury problems. So when that's the case, you can have eight midfielders, but if seven of them are injured all the time, then you're in trouble. And that's where I think a few of us are maybe starting to get a little bit worried. And I think the manager's maybe burying his head in the sand over it a little bit, if I'm totally honest.
So it's just, I'll come back to you on that. So you think that ultimately the manager either backs his players to be fitter than they are, / backs his recovery team to get those players to be fitter than they are? Because I think that's the key point. When people go through the idea of, you know, some of these lads get injured, you know, as though the Liverpool manager doesn't know about injuries. I mean, I suspect at the minute he feels like he knows about little else. So my point here is your view that ultimately the manager has decided, I'm just going to run these, and he's ignoring what could be the evidence to the contrary? Is that genuinely what you think it is, that that's where he's ended up?
No, I think what it is that perhaps the only criticism I would ever level at Jurgen Klopp is that he's sometimes too loyal. And I think, for example, we saw him stick to Simon Mignolet as goalkeeper for too long. I think we could all say he wasn't good enough, and we kept persisting with him. And then we tried Karius, and you know, most people were saying he's not good enough, but the manager persisted with him because he's loyal. And I get the reasons why, because you don't get players who are going to run through brick walls for you if you don't show loyalty. So I do understand why he's loyal, but sometimes I think he's loyal to a fault. And with the midfield, I think he sees everybody at their best. We know Jurgen Klopp is a positive person. He's a positive mindset person. So I think he sees everybody, he thinks of everybody when they're at their best. So he thinks of Thiago at his best. When he's on the pitch, he's an unbelievable player. And I think that he sometimes turns a blind eye to the fact that he's not available a lot. So he's able to kind of ignore the fitness problems because he goes, ah, but when he's there, he's unbelievable. So we end up in a situation where we've got loads of players that the managers think is unbelievable. And I think the manager is justified in thinking are unbelievable, by the way, a lot of the time. You know, I would die on a hill of Jordan Henderson being an unbelievable midfielder. I absolutely will. And the manager, I think, thinks that as well. But Henderson can pick up an injury. You know, would anybody on this call say that we cannot envisage a period during the season when Jordan Henderson, Thiago, Naby Keita, and Fabinho are all injured? We can all picture that happening, can't we? Because the manager asks so much of his midfield. So when you do that, you need to make sure you've got workhorses that are able to cope with that load. And I don't think all of them can at the moment.
Sean, is that fair? Is the manager too loyal? Can those workhorses not deal with the load?
I completely agree. I think Adam hit the nail on the head with us burying our heads in the sand a bit. I think no one can deny he can be good on his day, but I feel like he's replaceable. I think he could be quite good. I think he could be very good, but we all know his availability has stunted that growth.
Keita.
The question on my mind is how much more time does he need, or do we all need to kind of see this be proven? You know, we're 5 years in now. He's already played more games for Liverpool than he played for Salzburg, where he kind of got that reputation. And if you actually look at the stats, he misses games as much as he starts them. Obviously, you've got kind of being in the squad and coming off the bench as a caveat for that. But if you look at the Premier League since he's been here, since 2018, he started 46, but he's missed 39 due to injuries and suspension, to be fair. FA Cup started 5, injured and suspended 5. Champions League started 14, injured 14. So I think it's a frustrating one to think, well, at what point is this problem going to fix itself? I don't think it will. And don't forget, he was a record signing at the time. And I think by those standards, maybe unfairly, we do kind of hold him to that. And I think if you're kind of looking at it being a record signing, he's probably not lived up to what that standard should have been. It's not saying he's been a flop. He's been part of so much success at the club and he has played a part. But I do think he's replaceable. And that was always my stance with Genie when that contract was running down. Incredible servant for the club, but I felt he was replaceable and I backed the club to kind of to stand off with the contracts and not over-offer. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see a similar situation. And don't get me wrong, I think he starts at United, and I know we'll go into the preview later on, but he could still have a really good season with us, but I wouldn't lose any sleep over him running the contract down and leaving next year.
I think the manager is too loyal at times, Sean. You know, Adam there, he uses Mignolet as an example. The thing I think is Liverpool might have just been waiting until they could find the goalkeeper that they really wanted. And that's something that, you know, they look at. I think he's shown, I think, a level of ruthlessness around some players at times in some moments. But do you think he could be too loyal?
I think he's probably a bit like Bob Paisley. Whilst you're there, he'll make out you're his favourite child, and before you know it, you've gone, and you'll go when he thinks it's the right time to go. You know, Paisley would put his arm around the European Cup winning captain and tell him the next day they're off. So I think with this manager, I do think that he's loyal, but I also think that he's ruthless. I think more so with the Mignolet situation is that he knew that he needed a proper keeper, and he didn't have one available that suited him at that point in time. So I think it can appear that he's if you like, incorrectly loyal, as if he's keeping them through loyalty rather than through duress. I mean, Naby was available last year and he uses him 19 times. I think that's the biggest tell in all of this. It doesn't matter what we think, in that he has had his injury problems, but last year that seemed to be behind him. So the question for the manager is, why did you only select him 19 times when we go into a Champions League final with Thiago in bits and Fabinho in bits? So there's an argument that had you used Naby Keita more during the season, would they have been a bit fresher? Or argument two, if Naby Keita is as good as you all say that he is, why did he not start the Champions League? Because that's the point of a top squad. You can't say Liverpool have the best squad in the Premier League and then go, oh, but by the way, when the lads aren't 100%, we flog them because what we bring in isn't good enough. That's not how it works. I think the bigger conversation is why we didn't sign a young winger who's happy to be fifth or sixth choice this season, because I actually think that is a bigger problem than the midfield chat or Naby Keita chat. And we have a major problem, I think, in terms of what we do now, because we should be bringing off potentially off the bench young, pacey, rapid wingers, which gives us the flexibility to play Jota central, play Salah central, not have to play Jota on the left. You look at the squad now, when does Diaz get a break? Who do you want to play wide left? Jota? Jota's not available, what are we doing? And I think that's the hole in the squad for me. Because I wonder whether they thought Oxlade-Chamberlain would do both. And to think that Oxlade-Chamberlain's a midfield option, a forward option, on form, his injury record is mad. And I think that's the thing, is I thought they thought Oxlade-Chamberlain would cover both. And I think that's a big error.
As part of this, where you'd end up is with this player, with this contract, as Sean says, as I'm sure expect him to start against Manchester United. We'll come back around in a second or two and we'll talk about Manchester United preview stuff. I expect him to start against Manchester United. He scored there last season. I thought he was ever so good. He does play, albeit in, you know, one, he comes on, as it were, in training in the warm-up because of the injury to Thiago. But he does play in our last three visits to Wembley. He does start in our last three visits to Wembley. So I take Sean's point, but he does start in all of our last three times we play games at Wembley, Naby Keita. And that is the strangeness of him. And I think this is why it's a conversation that's still sort of, and will always feel unfinished if he stays, if he goes, no matter what happens, in a really weird way. I feel as though, in part because the midfield, in part because of the injuries, in part because of his own level, we are in this funny little position with him where, you know, Adam, he will endlessly be neither one thing nor the other, and yet still be able to look back of being a significant part of an incredible period in his success for Liverpool.
Yeah, which is, again, which I think like totally fits the brief of why so many people are confused about him. I think I would argue that the majority of people are in that kind of middle bit about Keita. There aren't that many people who think he's the best thing since sliced bread, though there are some. There aren't that many people that think he's utter shite, though there is Kev Walsh. So I think most people kind of fit into the middle thing of kind of going, yeah, I don't know what he is, because sometimes when I see him, he's great. Sometimes when I see him, I don't know what he does. And I think the problem is we've had that I don't know what he does thing before with Genie, but actually I think if you watch him, most people did know what he was doing. It was just a sort of thing of I don't know what he does, because they see him score for Holland and then he comes and plays for Liverpool and didn't do that. With Keita, when people say I don't know what he does, is because they've watched a match and he's just not really done anything. He's just not been one thing or the other, and that I think just leaves you really befuddled as to what's going on. And yes, he starts games, but we all remember that he's also been taken off at half time in some big games as well. So and you know, the injury, illness, whatever, 36-year-old James Milner, to go back to that, was being run into the ground against Crystal Palace. We had the sub to do it and he didn't put Keita on in place of Milner, even for 10 minutes at the end, to see what he could do. So I am just not convinced. And the 19 starts that Sean mentions brings us back to it. I'm just not convinced that the manager likes him that much. I just don't think he hates him. So I just don't think he knows what to do with him.
But the key thing here, though, Sean, is, and this is, you know, there's people making noises about a lack of scorer in Liverpool's midfield and all that sort of stuff. We do ask our midfielders to do different things. And for me, that is the core problem. And the part why I think he might move on, Keita, that he might actually want to move on, is he might want to go somewhere where it was the way in which it was when he was at Leipzig, which was the whole game went through him. The way Liverpool play, the whole game doesn't go through any of the midfield three, even Thiago, who is one of the most game put through me centre midfielders you've ever seen. You've seen at times that doesn't always happen as well. And I think that's what's really difficult to be one of Liverpool's midfielders, is they made a series of decisions that makes you at least feel, whether you are or you aren't, it makes you at least feel like you're less important, and therefore it's harder for people to fall in love with you.
I think I can see a situation where Klopp is having to sit them down and do the whole, listen, it's not you, it's me type of thing. I just think he's not, I just don't think the conditions are there for him to thrive. And I'm so at peace with him just being, and I think the club are at peace with him being okay. It sounds like levels of beigeness seem to be his issue. He's like, no one hates him, no one loves him, or like he just doesn't overperform or underperform. He's just there. But for Liverpool, like, happy days. He's an incredible fourth choice. He can turn up and have a big game. He can turn up and do that in finals and semi-finals. He's not there all the time. But I think from the club's perspective, like, we'll get loads out of him this season. I'm so happy for him to still be in the squad, and I want to see him against Man United. I just think when it comes to contract situations and investing more money in him, that's where I'd kind of have to draw the line. So I think he's had a lot of time now.
There we are. More counter presses per 90 than any other Liverpool player in the opposition half over the course of last season. If you want to talk about what Liverpool want from a midfielder, that is Naby Keita doing a fair bit of it. If you are listening to this as a podcast, you're about to hear Michelle Langan and Augustine Malenga coming by interview with John Gibbons. That was the clumsiest sentence I've ever said, and we'll see where it ends up on the other side. If you are enjoying this as a tour live, you won't have to wait for Manchester United build up. It will happen almost instantaneously. It will happen at 18:45. Marvellous stuff.
It's John Gibbons for the Anfield Wrap with a read through courtesy of Audio Boom, and it is for NordVPN. Now, we've been doing NordVPN for a while, but I just want to check that everyone knows what it is. VPN stands for Virtual Private Network, so it's a service that protects your internet connection and privacy online. It creates an encrypted tunnel for your data, protects your online identity by hiding your IP address, and allows you to use public Wi-Fi hotspots safely. And what that also does in terms of, you know, hiding your IP addresses, it means that you can log on from other countries. And there are obvious benefits for that, including watching sporting events which aren't airing in your region by switching your virtual location to a country which is showing the event. Now, there might be something coming up. Oh, is it in a week's time, next Saturday, that isn't on TV in the UK but is in other countries due to the 3 p.m. blackout? And so something like a NordVPN service might help you watch that online in other countries. It also helps you with purchasing flights from different virtual locations to find cheap flights. So if you were looking to get away with it once the Champions League draw is done in the future, and you're seeing flights skyrocket, maybe look to change your location, and you might be able to see some cheaper flights that way. NordVPN can also save you money by purchasing subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price, and it also protects your data while traveling and using public Wi-Fi. And so if you want to give all of that a go, and why wouldn't you, you can go to nordvpn.com/wrap. That's nordvpn.com/wrap. That's obviously W-R-A-P. It's got a huge discount off your NordVPN plan, plus one additional month free as well. And it's completely risk-free. They're so confident that you'll like the service that they are giving, a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you get it, you're not sure about it, it's not for you, you can get a money-back guarantee within 30 days. That's how confident they are that it will change your internet life. So that address again is nordvpn.com/wrap, and thanks a lot to NordVPN for partnering with us again. It's John Gibbons for Tour Live, and I'm on location, which is nice. It's nice to get out of the studio. A little walk across town from our studio to Queen Square and to Paper Cup Cafe. And the reason I've come here is to meet Michelle, who is the owner, proprietor. I don't know how you want to describe yourself, Michelle, but here with me now to tell us more about it. So thanks for welcoming us into your beautiful establishment, first of all.
Thank you for coming in. So glad to welcome you in. Glad you're going to see it firsthand.
Yeah, it's lovely to come in. If you could tell us a little bit more about it, because I'm here to have some lunch after we've done this, yeah. But it's about a little bit more than that, than just feeding the people of the city and beyond. So tell us a little bit more about Paper Cup, if you don't mind.
Yeah, so Paper Cup Coffee is part of the Paper Cup Project, which is a local charity that works with homeless people. So we set up the coffee shop in February this year, so we've been open since February. And our coffee shop, as well as having like lovely foods and coffee, and we also offer a pay it forward scheme where people can come in and buy a coffee. They can pay forward a coffee for a person who's homeless to come in and redeem anytime, or if they want to get some food, that kind of thing, they can, and they can sit in or they can take away, it's up to them. And then the other thing that we're doing is we are working with a training provider, a partner, to deliver training, to train up people who've been homeless and to get them back into work. Basically, it's to build people's skills and, more importantly, build people's confidence.
Of course.
Because if people have been homeless and they've been out of work for a long time, it can be really daunting thinking about, you know, once they're rehoused and having to get back into a kind of routine of living, it can be really daunting to even think about going anywhere near back to the workplace.
Absolutely. No, I could just imagine that. So there's a lot to it. Yeah. And there's a lot to you know, people just walk past and say, oh, that looks like a nice place to have a cup of coffee. But what you guys are doing is across the city, and I'm assuming more important than ever, because, you know, with
the way the country is now, the way the world is now, really, you know, there's a lot more people struggling than ever, really. So I assume you see more and more value to what you do than ever before.
Oh, gosh, yeah. You know, like, I think it's frightening, really, isn't it? I think we're heading into a winter of uncertainty and not knowing where we're going to be. So for us, we're preparing as a charity to see more people on the streets coming into the winter because prices of everything's going up, the utility bills, all of that kind of thing. So yeah, we offer a space as well for, you know, when it is coming into winter, we've got a space where people who are homeless can come in and sit in and have a coffee as well and be in a welcome and friendly, safe space.
Yes. It's funny, isn't it? Because it's offering warmth in every way, really, isn't it? Because they can come in from the cold, but also it's that warmth of feeling that you're welcome.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen in other places where homeless people have come in and even someone's bought them a coffee, like, you know, people have sort of whistling in there and things like that. And it's dehumanising, really, isn't it? And so for having somewhere for people who are able to go, where they know that they're not just going to get a nice warm cup of coffee, but also a smile and get treated like, you know, just like everyone else in there, must be really nice.
Yeah, and also, John, it's a thing about choice. It's having a choice to choose what you want. You know, if you're living on the streets, you've got no money, you can't go into a cafe or a coffee shop and say, I'll have that, or I'll have that, I'll have that, because you haven't got the money to do that. So when they come in here, because someone else has paid it forward, they've got a choice of if they want a latte, they want a cappuccino, and it's a very small thing to us. But for someone who's homeless, they're not used to having that ability to make a choice about things. So it's nice to be able to give them that choice.
Yeah, it's not something I've even thought about. It's something that the rest of us take for granted, really.
Yeah.
That sort of they don't have. So how important is it that this place does well to support sort of, you know, your wider aims, if you like?
Really important. At the moment, since we've opened, we've been running at a loss, which I know loads of other businesses are the same because the prices of things have gone up and people are not going out as much. So for us, it's really, really important that people support us. So, you know, everyone goes out for a coffee. It's just about where you choose to go for your coffee. So when you come into town and if you want to get a sandwich or a bit of cake or a tea or whatever, what I would say is if you spend your money with us, you're doing a bit extra. It's not like if you go to one of the large corporation ones, who I'm not going to name, if you go to one of them, you know, you're supporting a big business, a multi-million pound business, and your money is going into the pockets of a multi-million pound business.
And some of them don't pay the taxes.
Exactly. Exactly. Whereas if you come and support us, you know, your money is going so much further because you're investing in someone, is the way that I look at it. You're investing in someone's future and giving someone opportunities.
And the more people who come here, the more people you're able to train and things like that, the more people you're able to put through those programs.
Exactly.
Which is looking to turn around people's lives.
Yeah, exactly.
In terms of, you know, the people who are coming to you to help, you know, we said it's more and more, you know, how do people find you and how are you finding people? I know for some nights you're literally out there on the street speaking to people.
We do outreach. We've got a team of volunteers that does outreach, so we go out and we speak directly to people. So we see people that way, and then we signpost people towards the shop when we go out. So when we're out on a Monday night, I'll always say to people, do you know about the shop? And most of them know. But if it's people that don't know, I say to them, come into the shop, you can get drink, food. And also if they want to use the phone or anything, there was a guy that we saw a couple of weeks ago who'd lost touch with his family. And he said, my family won't pick up the phone to me. So I said to him, come into our shop, you can use the phone anytime you want. And even if it takes 20 calls before you can actually, you know, speak to them, then that's fine, just come in. So if people need to come in, they need our support, so we're there for that as well.
Absolutely. So people might know where you are. Yeah, you said you recently sort of opened. We're in Queen Square. It is well signposted from the centre, to be fair, but we're just sort of round the corner from La Tasca. To our right is a lookout, and you've got the top of Whitechapel. We're not far from the tunnel. It is very central, isn't it? And so people might not know exactly where it is yet if they've not been down there, but it is very easy to get to and very easy to find.
Yeah, and we're dead close to Lime Street Station as well. That's that's something that I take for granted, but we're literally just right, like 5 minute walk from Limesheet station. So if people are getting the train in, we're very, very close. Get off the train, come in and grab yourself a coffee.
So if you're in town for the football next Saturday, maybe you're coming in for the Bournemouth game, you know, come in here, get yourself set up. I've seen a breakfast menu downstairs. It looks delicious. It's very, very well priced as well. So I'm sure you'd love to welcome lots of Liverpool fans next Saturday morning for the bacon butty to set them up for the day.
Yeah, definitely. Welcome.
And in terms of, you know, you mentioned it's tough at the moment and you're running at a loss, but, you know, growth for you guys would mean so much more than, you know, just being able to say, oh, we've got a successful business. It's the help you're able to be. It's, you know, initiative. I'm sure you've got 50 ideas in your head of things that you'd love to do in the future if this goes well.
Yeah, I mean, if it goes well, it would be great to open other coffee shops as well across the city region, you know, not just in Liverpool as well. We've already had loads of people getting in touch from other cities asking for advice on, you know, how to do something similar. So it's great that there is that will out there for people that want to do similar things.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we've been talking about food for so long, I'm going to go and eat something downstairs. It was Lizzie Doyle who put me in touch. She recommended the Cluffin. But I haven't had lunch yet, so I'm going to have a sandwich first and see if I can fit that in. But thanks so much for welcoming down. Looking forward to trying the food. And yeah, I think it's possible for you that it goes well here because what you do is fantastic.
Thank you, John. Thanks.
It is John Gibbons for Tour Live. I'm delighted to be joined over Zoom by a children's book over called Augustine Emelenga, who's here to talk about his books generally, but also one he's written about Liverpool Football Club, very suitably titled Never Give Up. So, Augustine, thanks so much for coming on and welcome to the Anfield Wrap.
Thanks a lot, John. Thanks for having me.
So you are, you're an author, primarily in children's books. You've done lots of books. I see lots of books there on Amazon, but we're here to talk about one in particular, which will be very interesting for people, especially people who've got children who are listening, called Never Give Up. So where did the inspiration, I guess, come from doing this, and why did you decide to do a book based on a Liverpool Football Club, but one match in particular?
Okay, yeah. So basically, I've been a Liverpool fan since I think I was 8 or 9 years old. I was born in Zambia, and I remember in Zambia, they only used to bring the league games on a Friday. So they were pre-recorded games. They were not live. And that's the time in the 80s when we had the Rushes and the Barnes and the Dog Leashes. So I just fell in love with the club from that time. So I am a children's books author. And then obviously my son, I've only got one son and two girls. He followed suit and became a big Liverpool fan as well. And after what happened, that Champions League tie with Barcelona, I had given up after the first leg. My son hadn't, and he said, no, we have to watch it. When Origi scored the first goal, I said, this is too much for me. And I walked out and I came to the office. And I could just hear my son screaming when the second goal went in. Eventually I stayed and I watched the rest of the game. And I told him that, you know what, one of these days I'm going to write a book about this. And yeah, that's what I decided to do.
So you decided to do that, and the book is Never Give Up. It's beautifully animated as well, and you know, it does kind of capture the moment forever for young people. But I'm interested in how much of a positive message you think this is generally for children, because, you know, I've got two young children myself now. You know, they're just under three, and my eldest is a little boy, and he's started to get into it. I think it was all the flags that were all around Liverpool when we got to the cup finals that really kind of got him excited. And then he watched the FA Cup final on telly, and I think he sort of understood that daddy was there and things like that. And so, you know, but football can teach us a lot, can't it? And it can teach young people a lot. And I think this idea of going into this game like Liverpool did against Barcelona and not having much hope, but believing anything was possible and achieving it, I think is a really positive message for all of us, but especially for young people.
Exactly, yeah. So basically, I think you've got that in a nutshell, because It's also just in general in life. I mean, if you look at my story, I'm an accountant, but my passion has always been to write. And I just decided to start writing and publishing my own books in lockdown in 2020. It's been rough. It's, you know, self-publishing, you have to pay for the stuff yourself, you have to market and everything. But just as the title goes of the book, never give up, because if you do give up, then you're not going to achieve your goal. So yeah, that's exactly what I would advise to the young kids and to the adults as well out there.
It must have been great for you to combine your passions into one, really, because you've got, you know, the idea of, you know, obviously you've got the books that you write, you know, you're a children's book author, and, you know, obviously that's a huge passion for you, and I see behind you on the Zoom, there's lots of, you know, the other titles that you've done, you know, to combine that with Liverpool Football Club and bring it together. This must have been a real passion project for you.
Oh yeah, definitely. Just when my illustrator came out and showed me the pictures, yo, I was so excited. and yeah, when I showed it to my son as well, he's 12 now. So this book is basically for the maybe 6 to 8 year olds. But even though he's 12, he enjoyed it as well. He felt like I captured it. He felt like he was watching the game again. And yeah, that's exactly what I want to do. This book is for all the Liverpool fans, the adults, and the kids alike.
So what's the reaction been like to the book? Have people got in touch with you who've, you know, bought it for the children or bought it for themselves and enjoyed it? Have you had some nice reviews from around the world from Liverpool supporters who've loved reliving this fantastic night through you?
Yes. The voice of Anfield, actually, the stadium announcer, he bought a copy.
Oh, wow, yes. Brilliant.
I think it's George Shepton.
George Shepton, yeah.
Yeah, so he bought a copy. And then one or two Liverpool fans bought a copy for themselves and for their kids. They haven't put up the reviews on Amazon, which I had requested, but they told me personally that they did enjoy it.
Oh, fantastic. Well, maybe lots of people can listen to this and then get those reviews on Amazon, because from personal experience, I know it does help. It is available on Amazon. That's where I'm looking at it now. The book is titled Never Give Up. Augustine's author name is K.A. Mulenga. That's M-U-L-E-N-G-A. So you'll be able to find it from there. If you are struggling, just send me a message on social media and I'll direct anyone to that quite gladly. Available around the world and people to enjoy it, and Liverpool fans all over, young and old, I guess, to relive this amazing night. Was it, you know, you mentioned there, Augustine, that you've been a Liverpool fan a long time. You know, for you, does it remain one of the most incredible nights in Liverpool's history for you?
Definitely. Apart from the 2005 Champions League final, I think that's definitely number two for me.
Okay. And does this give you a taste to do maybe more football stuff? Because as I say, you do lots of stuff, books on animals and things like that, and lots of other things that the young people are interested in. But have you got a taste to maybe, you might do some more football ones or more Liverpool ones specifically as well?
Yeah, I've actually done a football one called Susie Strickland's Sizzling Striker. Amazing. That's about a girl who loves football. It was more for the American market, so it's called soccer.
I'm sure we can get over that.
Yeah, so, and it was actually picked up by Scholastic. It's going to be published in a Scholastic kids magazine next year. It's a rewrite, which I did specifically for the magazine. So, yeah, and then I'm also looking at, since I was born in Zambia, there was the tragedy of the Zambian national team, which died in 1996. Yeah, so I want to write a kid's book about that as well.
Absolutely. Well, best of luck with everything in the future. Best of luck with this book. Thank you so much for coming on. As I say, do get yourself onto Amazon. Do have a look at this beautifully illustrated book. And all Augustine's other stuff as well is available to buy from there if you click through to the author. But Augustine, best of luck. Thanks so much for coming on. It's been really interesting hearing your story and hearing more about the book. It's another read through for the Anfield Wrap, and it is Football Prizes. And Football Prizes are partners again at the start of the season, and we're very happy that they are doing so. not just because it supports the Anfield Wrap, but also it gives you an opportunity to win some fantastic prizes, as lots of Anfield Wrap fans have listened, have told me, and have sent me the stuff that they've won, and I'm always really pleased when I see a signed shirt hung in your house that you've won through the Anfield Wrap and football prizes. It makes me feel good. So do let us know if you do win, and the opportunity to win this week is a signed Darwin Nunez shirt. Now, we might be out for a few games, but we still love him, don't we? And we still think he's going to be a big, big star at Liverpool. And you can win, surely one of the first shirts he's signed, I think it must be. It's a Darwin Nunez signed 22-23 Liverpool home shirt, plus the 7 instant win prizes as well. So how that means is there's 199 tickets available, and 7 of those tickets have a lucky number on. And if you are drawn with that number, you get one of those instant win prizes, and they include Diogo Jota signed and framed shirt, which isn't bad either as well. And so if you want to win one of those 7 instant win prizes or the star prize, which is the Darwin Nunez signed shirt, you need to go to footballprizes.co.uk/product/Nunez. That's footballprizes.co.uk/product/Nunez. There'll be links on our social, well, on our Twitter anyway, over the weekend as well, if you want to sort of use that to click through. The competition ends Monday the 22nd of August at 7:30, so you need to be quick. Tickets cost £3.95, and as I said, there is only 199 of them available, and let's see, oh, they've sold half already, they've sold 99 already, so you do need to be quick. It's a really good chance of winning, as I say, better than 1 in 200 of winning that star prize. You've got the 7 instant win prizes as well, so it's an excellent value competition, in my humble opinion, for just £3.95. So get yourself to footballprizes.co.uk /product/Nunez, get involved, and as I say, do let us know if you win. Best of luck.
And we are back to talk about Manchester United against Liverpool on Monday night. And Sean, I'll start with you. The fact that United are rubbish doesn't fill me with excitement about the fixture. I have a mild concern that if we're not careful, this could become one where it will feel all the way through as though Liverpool should be doing the running, Liverpool should be forcing the issue, that it should be Liverpool's game. I'm a little bit concerned that this allows United, it allows their manager to have one game where he gets to say this is backs against the wall. He's got his new way of playing, he wants them to be a little bit different, but he'll be able to say to his squad, and the crowd will respond if they are putting their bodies on the line in a defensive rearguard action. There will be a lot of people pleased about that because they've been poor and we scored 5 there last year.
Yeah, it's not a great time to play them, which is mad to say. But Klopp said it in his conference, he'd rather play them after they've won 5-0 than the result they've had. I think it's a turning point for both of our seasons. I think for them, they've got so much to kind of stick up on the dressing room and say, you know, you win this, you forget about the 2 games before. But equally for us, this has got to be a turning point for our season. I think if we walk away with anything less than 3 points, it's a little bit of a mini crisis, if I'm being completely honest. And I think if you're looking pound for pound, player for player on the pitch, we kind of have to walk away and win that game. But I also think the difficult thing for me, when I was trying to predict like how on earth this game's going to be, and I don't think either side knows what to expect, because neither of us have really hit our best form. Arguably Liverpool have played good in at least one of our first 2 games, but it's really hard to understand the template of how this is going to go. I guess the one thing that is on my mind, and Klopp even mentioned it in his press conference, which makes me think he's looking into this a bit more, in that we've played each other pre-season. Yes, we were definitely undercooked. I think we only arrived at the game 3 days beforehand, hence why they beat us 4-0. But Klopp said he was noticing they were playing a much higher press. Not that we've seen that much in the first 2 games, but there's a bit there for us to learn from, I guess, from the other 2 teams. We've kind of gone into it a bit blind. So I'm really intrigued by the game. I think what I don't want to see is like a million shots and 2 million XG in the first 20 minutes, because I don't think that necessarily means is the perfect indicator of a great performance. And I think it's almost can sometimes be an indicator of maybe lack of composure and just, you know, trying a bit of everything. I think if I reflect on the first 15 at Palace, like maybe just a bit of calmness and composure would have served as well, because we, you know, getting shots isn't a problem for Liverpool. I think it's really taken our chances.
I think, Sean, as part of what Sean's saying there for this one, thinking a little bit about Palace, but also just thinking in general about Liverpool's last however many league games, there's a little thing in this where United will turn up, they will be discouraged from the outset. There'll be issues with the supporters, issues around protests before a ball's even kicked. And this is to go back to all of those games where Liverpool have, even the games where Liverpool haven't conceded first in the last 15 or so. The thing I don't want us to do is to offer them any encouragement whatsoever. So either by scoring or by smothering them, as Sean's saying, maybe, you know, don't feel as though you've got to be hammering from distance or 18 yards or anything like that. Just keep the ball away from them and create an atmosphere where they themselves begin to feel like, my God, we might never get out. I think that's what Liverpool need to do. It isn't the idea of pounding them from the outset. It's the idea of making clear to them that the game is none of their business. That's what Liverpool need to do, I think.
I completely agree. I think the main thing I want to see in the first 10 minutes is territory. And ruthlessness from this Liverpool side. I think the worst thing that could happen is this becomes a 10 minutes of almost Fulham, if you like. I think what United will be pinned on the ropes on is that Liverpool move the ball around not quite as quick, thinking they can play their way in, and that United can just get the crowd up and just really go running. I mean, look, after everything you've seen from the Brentford game, and I think we've got the right manager for this, by the way, because Klopp knows that if he had a group of players that had the hiding that they had and all the fallout from that, he knows they would come out fighting. Now, that doesn't mean every club does, and that doesn't mean every group of players does, but the good thing is we've got a manager who will be guaranteeing everyone in there that that's what they will do. I just think with their fragile confidence, you want the ball deep in their half, putting them under pressure, because it'll be interesting what they do, because their manager's got, I don't think their manager has much of a choice, but he does have one. Does he do a Frank de Boer and potentially die on his sword and go, no, this is the way we play against everyone? There's no way he's getting by into that. I think that I can't believe he would do that, but he might. More likely, as he goes, we'll go back to that plan when we've worked on the training ground. That is not something we can risk doing against this lot. So I don't think you're going to see a United team looking to necessarily play this out from the back and everything else. I think you're going to see them be very, try and de-risk the game, really. And they'll want Liverpool to have the possession and go chasing us and look to take it off us and counter-attack. I think Liverpool, I just want to see Liverpool put them under immense pressure territorially more than anything and see what they do. Are you going to try and play your way out? Are you just going to go long and give us it back? Fine, we'll pen you in. And I think that doesn't give them any encouragement that first 10 minutes. And I think Liverpool have got to be far more ruthless with the tactical fouling. We've become too weak in the middle of the pitch for me. And I think the counter-attack is such a big risk to this Liverpool side that it has to be an attitude of ball or man. And that's it, period. There's too much messing around on the counter-attacks in this last run of 10, 12 games for me.
On, just come back to your point there on the territory aspect and making them answer that question, you're going to try and play out, or are you just going to go along and then we pick it back up? That to me is what, if you do that right, Sean, that's what turns a nervous Old Trafford into a basket case Old Trafford, i.e. there'll be a section of supporters who will say, don't mess about with it at the back, we don't want to lose it, if you try and mess about with it at the back. And then if you're just going along and it's coming back to Liverpool, then Liverpool are just picking it back up and starting again. There'll be a section of supporters going, can we just stop giving the ball back to them? And for me, that's the most important thing. It's the most important question to answer. If you want to get in their heads, you want that idea that supporters are completely split on what the right thing to do is, in the same way that players will then become completely split on what the right way to do is, because instinctively, they don't want to just be kicking it and giving it back to Liverpool. But simultaneously, the fear will begin to spread and grow. And that's, for me, that's the trick here for Liverpool. They've got to find ways to get that fear that Liverpool could garner at Old Trafford against this Man United side at the moment. They've got to get it right around that stadium.
Completely. What you, and it's, this sounds ridiculous because fragile their confidence is, but just even Liverpool, have them blocking two or three passes or even clearances in our half, this is like going to Goodison in a way. Like, they'll be cheering throw-ins on Monday night. This isn't Fergie's United we're going to. This is like going to Everton. So it is literally like, for 10 minutes, they don't get out of their half, and they'll be the ones making mistakes, giving it up. And they've also got a group of players, which is a bit of a mixed match. They've got some players there that on this world stage they're going to be on are not up for just lumping this, being yard dogs. And then they've got others who need to be yard dogs in this game. And I think Liverpool can take advantage of this. That's the mixed match of their side. And if Liverpool can just get that territory first 10, and give them no carrot, if you like, in that first 10 minutes. I can see Liverpool going 1-0 up, and that it could become chaos for them. We've got to remember, though, we've had much worse Liverpool sides than them, with worse managers than them, turn them over, by the way. So, like, this isn't a case of us going there steamrolling in these. They're going to be nothing like the Brentford that we saw. He'll need time. I think they've got a very, very good manager. I think we're going to face a bit more of a context on Monday night, and especially if we're not careful, I think we could be in for a difficult evening if we don't start well.
A difficulty even if they don't start well, Adam. I do agree with that from Sean. I think that this is a United side that is in lots of ways poor, but they've almost played their poor hand now, and it's how you undo it from here. It does allow them to play it like Goodison Park. I really do believe it. It does allow them to play, for them to play for territory. I think all of these are options for this Manchester United side. And the one thing that we do want to do is break that hope. But I think they'll be better than they were against Brentford. They have to be.
Well, they have to be. Whether they will be, I'm just not convinced. I think there's been a lot of the noises that have come out this week have been about player unrest. You know, there's been players with the group of players going to the owners and saying you need to buy new players. You know, it's just not happy. That no one's happy there at the moment. And I simultaneously completely agree with you and Sean that we need to start well, whilst also thinking that if we do, we're going to batter them. Because I think that a little bit like Goodison, it can be a bear pit, but if the crowd turns on them, it will not be a nice place for anybody there. And it won't take a lot for us to get the crowd to turn on them. If we go 1-0 up in the first 10 minutes, say.
And they haven't got out of their half, as
exactly. Sean said. They've barely got out of the half. They've been penned in. They've been under loads of pressure. The United fans won't be booing at Liverpool. They'll be booing at Erik ten Hag. And they'll be booing at, they'll be worried that they're witnessing a De Boer take place in front of them and all of that. And I think, look, I've said this point before, and I'll it's a drum I'll continue to bang. Before Alex Ferguson arrived at Old Trafford, United had the same number of league titles and European Cups as Aston Villa. Alex Ferguson was a genius, and he made them into a behemoth of a football club. What we're seeing right now is actually them just return to their norm, which is shite, generally speaking. They've been the media darlings for years. My dad always used to say when we were growing up, Manchester United have always been, at the time, they were not a successful the successful club that they are now. And my dad always used to say, Manchester United are the media darlings. The media love them, even though they've not really won anything. Then they obviously went on and won loads of Premier Leagues, became an incredible winning machine, three European Cups, et cetera, et cetera. But actually, I just think what we're seeing is Manchester United return to what they used to be before the genius of Alex Ferguson was there. And Liverpool have got the chance to go to Old Trafford, get our season back on track, and put them in their place as a team that are nowhere near our level right now. And I think if we start well, that's exactly what we'll do.
Sean, then what is the Liverpool team that puts them in their place? That's what the manager says at the press conference today. What team are you expecting him to pick, and will you be pleased to see it?
I think back four, back five picks itself. It sounds like Gomez is going to be fifth.
Yeah. Which is good news.
Yeah, great news. Especially for what we saw at the end of Palace. Front three picks itself. I think I was kind of torn between the same... I think it was the same midfield that we had away last season to them, Keita, Henderson as the six and Milner. Wouldn't be actually shocked to see Milner start maybe, but I do think Keita will come back in, especially I think maybe with some of the rumblings that has happened this week, Klopp might, want to be seen to give him a chance, which I'd be really happy with. Or you might see maybe a Keita, Fabinho, Henderson. I don't know if Fabinho needs to play himself into form, but he's just not been right. Really has not been right the past few games. And you just don't want to judge it on moments, but obviously the Palace goal doesn't cover him in glory, but there's just a lot of moments that first half. He just couldn't get the ball from under his feet. So I don't know if it's going to be a worse thing to drop him or whether he'll play himself into form, but I really wouldn't be shocked seeing Henderson as a number six.
When you say the front three, you expect it to be Salah, Firmino, Diaz?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sean, what do you expect from the manager?
Broadly, yeah, the same. I think there will be a bit of a tactical change. I think we did a review, Neil, I think post-Cardiff away years ago, and it was very 4-4-2 diamond. but to the media and everything, it was 4-3-3. I think Bobby will be dropping deep here, and they'll want Diaz and Salah positioned in between their centre halves and full back, whether they play a five or a four. I think in a weird way, one good thing is Liverpool are not going to have a clue how United are setting up for this game tactically or in the team. So with this amount of time, Liverpool can plan for A, B, C and D of what United might do. I think whatever they do, though, they're going to want Diaz and Salah's movement causing problems between their centre-back and full-back, because United are a mess in them areas. They're all over the place. And I don't care who they've got as manager, they're not fixing that anytime soon for me. I think in midfield, I think I'd be tempted to go Henderson, Milner, Keita, like he started last season. Because I think it gives you a load of options off the bench. Look, I'm Harvey Elliott's number one fan. So if it was my soul, if this will never happen, if it was me, I would probably start him. A concern would be, and this comes back to my winger point from before, what do you do with your front three? Because if Bobby got 90 in him? If Diaz got the full 90 in him? And you look at our bench and you go, I might need Harvey Elliott on the bench to use as a forward option. Whereas I'd actually like him to start in midfield, buzzing around some of the mess they've got in midfield. And what you want to do is take the ball off them and have carriers. That's why Keita was so good in the game last season, because Keita was able to bridge midfield to attack with the through balls and the third man running. So I think the sensible thing is to have Harvey Elliott on the bench because of the forward line issue. And I would go Henderson, Milner, Keita. I don't think he will. I think he'll go Fabinho, Henderson, and then who knows if Keita's trained well, is fully fit, I expect him to start.
Are you picking Fabinho, Adam? Do you think the manager will be picking Fabinho?
I think the manager will. I think he will want him, exactly as Sean said, I think he'll want him to play himself into form because he's not started the season well. But I think the manager would start him. So I think it will go with Fabinho, Henderson, Elliott, because I think Elliott's been great. I thought Elliott was man of the match against Crystal Palace. I thought he was fantastic. Our man of the match. I thought he was fantastic. So I the manager does sort of do a meritocracy a lot of the time, and I set, especially for the players that are in the team, if they keep performing well, then he'll do that. And I realise I've just said he'll do a meritocracy, having said that Fabinho hasn't been playing well this season, but he's also a bit contradictory. So I think he's going to go exactly the defence that Sean said and the attack that Sean and Sean said, but I think the midfield will be Fabinho, Henderson, Elliott.
Okay. Adam, are we going to win the game?
Yes.
Sean, are we going to win the game?
Yes. And I can't believe we've gone the whole episode without referencing the Ryan Giggs poem. But it's always nice when one of their ex-players does something ridiculous in the press right before an away in Old Trafford. The timing for Paul's goal, sucks his daughter toes, in the away end last year was impeccable for that game. And hoping someone can whip something up as a little champ before Monday.
I can't speak for Adam or Neil. I suspect the same. I'm just worried whether any of my poems would occur. More so from junior school, by the way. Not quite the same tone as Ryan Giggs. But
we're going to win the game, Sean.
First goal winner.
I agree with Sean Rogers. I think Liverpool have got to score first because I think if not, they're going to give United too much encouragement, and then it might have 1-1 written all over it after the Brave rear guard action. I've got no interest in Brave Mancunian rear guard actions through this game. I've got no interest in Manchester United regaining some form of pride and decency. It's Liverpool's job to ensure that they are left without points, they are left without pride, and that Liverpool get to romp home as victors. Thank you very much indeed to Sean, to Adam and to Sean. It'll be a massive, massive Monday night. Loads of build up on the Anfield Wrap. Download the app. Enjoy everything that you can over the course of your weekend. Take it easy.
Sports Social Podcast Network.